If you've been told you need a filling crown or a root canal, get a second opinion at Dental Pros of Utah and American Fork. They utilize the latest biomimetic techniques to rebuild your teeth in order to prevent ever having to get crowns or root canals later in life. DentalProsOfUtah.com, 801-756-0360. That's 801-756-0360. Brady Papinga once again. What's up, Brady?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
We got you back on the line. It's great to have you, man. How did you get your six-pack? Only by doing the XPT trainer exercises.
Well, you know what's cool is the XPT is easy to do high-intensity interval training with because you can transition from, like, bench press to squat seamlessly because you don't have those hooks that you generally have on, like, power racks. So I every day, well, not every day, but, you know, when I do lift weights, which is three times or the six times I work out a week, and I only do it for 20 minutes. I do high-intensity interval training to where you're able to get your heart rate right to that perfect zone where you're burning calories and fat, but then also you get that afterburn effect. And you're able to do that with the XPT because you can continuously continue to move instead of having to do your bench. Oh, now I got to stop and go to the squat or vice versa. You can keep your routines flowing to where you get that heart rate right into that sweet spot to where you're burning the most fat and you're building the most muscle at the same time. And at the same time, you're getting that afterburn effect. So there's a trifecta of benefits from being able to keep moving, and that's what the XPT brings, man.
Brady, we're not in as good a shape as you, but I feel like, you know, as far as a target is concerned, would you say that this is a good machine for, like, CrossFitters? Because, like, everybody loves CrossFit these days. Like, everyone just loves it. And, like, I'm in the orthopedic world. I consult with products and other things, the conservative management and rehabilitation of injuries. But I see so many CrossFit injuries. Is this a pretty good spot for those CrossFitters to maybe make that transition into straight bar lifting?
Oh, no question, because you can control the bar. It has a self-spotting braking system on it. And then also, there's been a number of studies done for the last 20 years about the benefits when you're talking about developing power, like you do with power cleans or Olympic lifts, of throwing the bar. And obviously, in a traditional lifting environment, throwing the bar means you got to catch it, which is dangerous and puts extra stress on the body. With the XPT, you can throw it and the brakes will catch the bar for you. So you're able to train power safer, more effectively, and there's studies that have also shown that you can generate more power in training by doing a jump squat or a bench throw than if you were just doing a power clean. So let's say you're somebody that's in CrossFit that's trying to improve your personal record or personal best on power cleans. The only way you're going to be able to do that, well, there's a couple ways. One is improve your technique. The other way is to become more powerful. So heck, go do some jump squats instead of regular squats on the XPT because all the regular squats make you stronger. It still doesn't generate the highest amount of power because, as we know, what's the formula for power? Strength, which is what you get out of regular squats, times speed, meaning how fast you move that bar equals power. So being able to move a loaded barbell with weight on there fast is essential for generating high levels of power, which then if you can do that and become more powerful, guess what's going to happen to all of your Olympic lifting personal bests? They're going to increase. So there is a tremendous benefit of being able to do explosive movements on the XPT for somebody who's in CrossFit that's looking to take that next step in terms of being able to get their personal bests or lift the most they can on the power clean, snatch, or what have you.
Mass times acceleration equals the force of Brady Papinga.
Brady!
Boom. Brady, I got to get your thoughts on the guys that will stick in the NFL from this BYU draft class, this BYU senior class. Let's start off with Algernon Brown. I thought he had a good pro day, looked good. He has got good film from both the tailback and fullback position now. He played on a pro-style offense this past season. Maybe he's decent on special teams, 5'11" or so, 245 pounds. What do you think? Does he stick in the NFL?
The key with him is special teams. Because all the other stuff, every other fullback is going to be able to do. The differentiator from keeping a fullback versus not is this guy valuable on special teams? I saw it personally with John Kuhn up there in Green Bay, Wisconsin. He had bounced around from a number of different places. And, oh, by the way, if you don't know who John Kuhn is, Google the guy. He's one of the best fullbacks in the league. You know, obviously we know there's not many of them, but he, of the really good ones, of the ones that do play, he's really good. It's because he plays special teams so well. He does it in all, whether it's the kicking game, the returning game, punting game, punt return game. He can go out there and be an effective, viable member of those units. And then at the same time, they can use him on the offensive side of the ball. So the key for a guy like Aldrin Brown as a fullback, you got to humble yourself. You got to say, look, whatever special team drill is happening, I'm going to the front of the line. I got to show that I can be an effective member of this group, because if not, it doesn't matter how good he is as a fullback. Let's be honest. Teams don't need fullbacks. They can use a tight end, line them up in the backfield if they really needed to. And so he's got to show that you don't want to let me go, because not only can I do the fullback stuff, but more importantly, I can do the other things that nobody else wants to do, which is special teams. So for him, if he's going to stick and be a guy that's in the league for a number of years, special teams has got to be his ticket.
He stick, though. Do you think he sticks this year?
Well, like I said, it all depends on his willingness and ability to play in special teams. That's what it's what's going to come down to for the majority of these rookies. Other than maybe like five guys in this draft, and they're mostly quarterbacks, special teams is going to be the reason either why a guy plays a lot this year, or why, and I'm even talking top 10 picks, or guys that eventually are either going to be on the bench because they're developing, or guys that just don't make it. So special teams for Aldrin Brown is going to be critical.
Defensive back Mike Davis, does he stick? What do you think about him?
Then it's the same story with Mike Davis. Now, obviously, his is different because he has such a specialized skill in terms of, and I'm talking all corners, not Mike Davis specifically, but if you can go out there and you can man press a guy, oh, my goodness. Oh, you know how much flexibility, you know how it is, Ben? You give so much more options to your defensive coaches, the kind of defenses, the blitzes, the pressures, all the deception that you can now run because you got a guy who can man press, and everybody runs man press to some form or another, and you know, with whether it's a two high or single high or whatever. And so for him, can he go out there with the best guys and man press them up and make their life miserable? Now he's got length, he's got speed, he can do it. But again, it hinges on his ability to go out there and at the line of scrimmage, slow these guys down, get up under their skin, get into their pads, and wreak havoc all over the field, making it to where their life is miserable trying to get open. If he can do that, it doesn't matter what he does anywhere else, special teams or anything, he'll make the team, and he'll be a hot commodity for years to come in the NFL. So whether he makes it or not, again, it's all dependent on his ability to get in there, have the mentality of, hey, I don't need help anywhere, and lock guys down. If he can do that early on and send that message, the guy will stick, and I'm going to tell you what, he'll have a job for the next 10 years.
What about Andrew Eide? That's someone that is somewhat of a sleeper, according to some.
Yeah, well, he's got to show his ability to be a swing man, because I'd say right now he's not a dominant tackle. He's not a dominant guard. And guys like that, hey, I knew a guy by the name of Gray Rugemer who wasn't dominant at a tackle, he wasn't dominant at a guard, he wasn't even dominant at a center. But, man, he was pretty good at all of them. And guess what? He put together a 12-year career, run a couple Super Bowls. Those guys are valuable because you get a swing guy who can play guard, he can play tackle, play center, pretty much all positions across the offensive line. Plus, there are teams like the Oakland Raiders last year that will throw out another offensive lineman as like a big tight end when they're saying, look, we're going to run the ball, we're not throwing it, so we're putting six guys out there. If he can show that he can do that, at the very least, those things, they are so valuable because now you don't have to reach and say, okay, we need extra linemen or we need an extra guard. You can say, we got this guy. He can do that and this. So if he can do that, this guy, I mean, like I said, he'll have a career for the next decade of being a guy that at the very least, now that's not to say that all of a sudden he doesn't pop out and all of a sudden become one of those dominators at those positions. But if he doesn't, he's just good at all of them. That's his ticket. That's what's key for him of being able to stick.
I know you had some powerful words about Taysom Hill and his projections as an NFL quarterback. Green Bay ended up flying him out to interview him and get to know him a little bit better. They only get 30 of those visits. Does Taysom Hill stick in the NFL, in your opinion, as a quarterback?
Well, he's got to go to the right place. That's the key for him. Because I know Taysom. We all know Taysom enough to know that the guy is going to work his tail off. He's going to do everything you ask him to do. But if you're not in a place to where they can give you good information and the very thing that they're asking you to do doesn't lead to success on the field, which happens in so many places. Yeah, look at the Rams last year. Look at the Browns for the last number of years. Those are two quick examples off the top of my head that if you're a quarterback with the best intentions, with the best work ethic, and you go in there and they're not telling you the right things, you're not going to succeed. I don't care how talented you are. I don't care how athletic you are. Ask Brady Quinn. Ask those guys that John Beck's another guy. That they would do anything. They'd run through a wall for any of these guys, but because they weren't given the right information to succeed and they weren't allowed to succeed because of developmental issues or what have you, they didn't pan out. and they weren't given the chance to pan out. And so that's the same for Taysom, and that's the same for any quarterback. It's a matter of where he goes, and that's going to go from the top guy, Trubisky or Deshaun Watson, all the way down to guys like Taysom Hill, and that's ultimately going to determine if he sticks or not, and ultimately determine if he has a successful NFL run.
Brady, Mitch Harper here, and follow up on Taysom. You know, you were a guy that served a mission, I believe, and went on to the NFL. How for all of us that, you know, follow this process and haven't experienced it, how much does the age thing really factor in? Because Taysom's going to be 27 this fall. How much is that weighing on teams when deciding on Taysom?
Depends. It depends if teams are stupid and closed-minded, which there's a number of them out there. That's why they're the bottom feeders. They'll look at that, and they're like, oh, gosh, he's 27, and it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It's like, no, you bring a guy in, the average career is 3 years, and you take a chance on a guy because at the very least, you got him there 3 years before he's 30. At the very best, all of a sudden, he turns out to be a guy that's going to be around for 8 to 10 years. So why not take the risk for the next 3 years? Doesn't make sense for anybody to ever use age against a guy in his upper 20s. Never does. Especially at the quarterback position, as we see with Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Brett Favre. I mean, you go down a whole list of quarterbacks that play well into their late 30s. And they, like I said, if you can find a quarterback for the next 10 years, you know, with a guy, I mean, and I'm talking just even a backup. I mean, that's a tremendous value of a player. So that 27, I mean, now if he was 35, you know, that's a whole other story. But, you know, maybe even 29, I would say still not a big deal. But it's overblown. And, again, a lot of times when people come out with these negativities about guys, oh, his age, it's generally the teams that really want the guy because they're hoping everybody's turned off by it and listens to him, which it seems like a lot of people do because, again, the people tend to listen to the things that they hear and have those little subconscious seeds that are planted in their minds. And so they'll look at a guy like Taysom and they'll say, oh, he's 27. But the biggest thing with Taysom is going to be his injury history. That's the one thing to where teams are going to really have to balance that risk versus does this guy have enough upside for us to pull the trigger on him. But the age thing shouldn't be an issue. It will be with some teams because, like I said, they're idiots and they're dumb, which there's a ton of them out there. But when you really look at the grand scheme of things, 27 is no big deal.
We got Brady Papenga, former BYU great, on with us here at Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. There's been, you know, it's interesting to me. Kainakua led the NCAA the last 2 years in takeaways and interceptions. Uh-huh. And you know, I mean, he accumulated a lot of tackles too, pass breakups. You know, everything on paper looks good, and then he has a tremendous pro day, yet no one's projecting him as a draftable prospect. Can you tell me why?
Yeah, and I would say that's there's a couple of factors. Number one is you look at his playing style, and it's one to where he plays, how can I describe this? I don't want to call him lazy because he's not. I know he's out there working hard, but he does look like he could give a little more effort. And so there's a question of effort, which then there comes a question of, does this guy really love the game? Because your safeties are the quarterbacks of your defense. As you know, Ben, they put you in all the coverages. They're reading the formations. They're the adjusters. They're the guys that are rolling. And all that means is one guy goes closer line of scrimmage. When the formation changes, oh, he goes back and the other guy goes forward. They have to be proactive, and they have to be guys that everybody trusts. And I do believe there's a trust issue with him. When you look at his way that he plays, it's just how, like, when I look at him, I'm the same way. I was like, is this guy like really into it? I mean, he sort of looks like he's going through the motions. And then that also feeds into special teams. Is this guy going to go out there in his first few years and make a name on special teams? And I keep bringing that theme up because, like I said, even the first round draft choices, Clay Matthews, for example, the first six games of his rookie season, he had to play special teams. He had to show that, hey, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be a guy that's going to do whatever it takes to help the team win. That's just the realities of the business and the realities of football. And so all those questions, I think, are hanging over a guy like Kainakua. And so you can talk about his college productivity all you want to. I mean, if you go back to even when I played in 05, you know, my career at BYU was 01 to 04, there was a safety in UNLV, I forget his name, and he was a ball-hawking machine. I mean, this guy had more turnovers than anybody, I think, over his three-year span in all college football. Now, he did go run a slow 40. He ran like a 5.0 40, but he didn't even get a chance, you know, and I think people saw the same thing. They saw a guy that they didn't believe could do the things that are necessary at that level, whether it's special teams, being proactive, being the game, you know, the coverage setter, those kinds of things. And then his speed, they felt like was a, you know, a liability. So, I mean, a great example of a guy who used special teams to make a name for himself and carve out a career was Aaron Francisco. He ran a slow 40. people questioned his game in terms of transferring to the NFL, but then he went out there and was a dominator, stud on special teams, and nobody could ignore that, and then that led to more opportunities on defense, which he obviously took advantage of. So I would say most people now, and I don't really worry about the pundits say after those, like, the Mayocks of the world. I don't really care what they say. I just look at the film, and I can tell you from looking at his film, and, hey, you can look at my Twitter feed from over a year ago in one of the games against Toledo, or the game against Toledo, where I called Kai out and said, that's just not going to cut it. And there were many plays like that where he basically was giving an effort that was questionable, and that's why I would say he's a prospect that he's going to get a chance, but I don't know if he would be worth the draft pick.
Brady, I like that pull of Jamal Brimmer. Brought back some memories of the old UNLV. Jamal
nice
Brimmer,
job.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you, Brady, you know, you talked about, you know, guys like Mayock and all these draft pundits. There's been a lot of talking heads out there stating a guy like Harvey Longhi might go before Jamal. When you look at the film, do you feel like Harvey is a guy that warrants a higher grade on teams' draft boards over a guy like Jamal who's maybe produced at a higher level?
Man, that's a good question, because productivity is only one variable there, Mitch, you know, when you look at it. So you got to sort of throw that out. And Harvey was just as productive as Jamal, even though Harvey didn't break records and all those kind of things. But Harvey showed versatility. He showed in the middle of a defense that he can cover well and be – he's balanced as a linebacker, especially as a middle linebacker, in terms of he fits well within the coverage and then he's physical against the run. Those guys are, you know, not a dime a dozen. You know, most middle backers are. And so he has a skill set that I would say gives him an advantage over the other inside backers in terms of being a two-way go guy, coverage, and then also a solid run stopper. But I would say between the two, it's a toss-up. You know, and another thing, too, is you got to look at the market. The market shows there's a lot of running backs that also may push Jamal's value down just by pure supply. I mean, you got to remember, this is a supply and demand business. This isn't about, okay, who had a more productive college career. And so I would say there's far less inside backers that are at the level of, let's say, a Harvey Longhi. So you got all those factors playing into this. And I don't look at it as Harvey's going to – it's a guarantee he's going to get drafted. I look at them both about the same. You know, they both could go as high as probably the third round, maybe, you know, and maybe late second, most likely high as third, and maybe all the way down to the fifth round, you know, considering all the situation. And, again, it depends how things shake out. But yeah, I look at them both at the same. You know, they're both going to have a chance to be solid NFL players, maybe great NFL players, depending on the situation they get into and depending on how the breaks sort of fall for them.
What's interesting is as I discussed this particular draft class with the former staff, they were very optimistic that you could maybe get three, maybe even four draftees from this class. And due to injuries, you might not get it. But one guy that would have been, I think, maybe a second-day guy, maybe third round, was Travis Tuiloma for his two injuries. The product out of Kansas that was a dominant nose guard. I mean, I go back and I watch that Nebraska game early on in that season of just a year ago, or a year, 2 years ago now, it seems, and he was a dominant defensive tackle. What do you think about Travis Tuiloma? Can he bounce back? Will he end up getting a chance eventually?
Well, those defensive tackles are the most valuable defensive players probably outside of a shutdown corner. So you got to look at it in the sense that, hey, is this guy worth bringing in to take a look at him? And yeah, the downside is he may get hurt because he seems to get hurt all the time. But when he's not hurt, he seems to also be a difference maker. So, I mean, I think he's going to get a chance. For that reason, I'd give him a chance. But I wouldn't draft the guy, you know, and for him, it will come down to, hey, man, could you push the pocket? Could you go and you display some of these offensive linemen, and can you attract double teams, and can you free up your middle backers so they can flow sideline to sideline? And then at the end of the day, can you put pressure on that quarterback? You know, as you sit down in that pocket or in shotgun, can you get into his face and, you know, make it to where he can't step up and take away his vision down the field? And ultimately, if you can hit the guy and sack him, man, then you're a heck of a player. So, I mean, he's the guy that he plays such a premium position. Unless there are some red flags in terms of health, I don't see why he doesn't at the very least get a chance to show what he can do. But I wouldn't draft the guy. I don't think he's shown enough. I don't think he's been consistently healthy enough for me to say I'm going to invest a draft pick in him. But for sure, they'd bring him in on a free agent contract.
There's been a lot of talk, Brady, about, you know, BYU's maybe lack of draftees in recent years. I want to ask, do you feel like there's a stigma about BYU football in NFL circles?
No, I do believe that there's more of a situation to where there just hasn't been a lot of draftable guys. And that's by design. You know, Bronco, he made it very clear as to what his prototypical BYU player was. It wasn't a guy that it wasn't a game that really translated to the NFL. I mean, you tell me a guy that stayed healthy, that had tremendous ability and should have been drafted, should have had a career in the NFL and didn't. Can you guys name me anybody in the last 5 years?
Nothing comes to mind right now.
Maybe Max Hall?
I know I put you on the spot. But there it is. I mean, there's really – I mean, the guys that should be in there, the Ezekiel Ansons, the Kyle Van Noy's, you know, those guys were guys that you know, Daniel Sorensen's another guy that I always thought, man, this guy could be a heck of an NFL player. And lo and behold, you know, he got a second deal. Those guys were always guys that we looked at like NFL-caliber guys, and nobody else really fit that mold. You know, but I say that's more of a function of how Bronco Mendenhall recruited. You know, he wanted guys to come in there and – you know, hold on to a certain culture and to have a certain attitude, and, you know, and it just ended up being to where those guys weren't those attractive, big-time, you know, recruits, and lo and behold, they weren't guys whose game really translated well to the NFL. So it's nothing to do with, you know, the NFL saying, oh, man, we got something against BYU. It's just there hasn't been many draftable guys. And it reminds me of a story, as a matter of fact. When I was with the Green Bay Packers, if you go back, what it was at, oh, when did we beat Oklahoma with Max Hall at the quarterback?
09.
Is that 08?
09.
09. Okay, so back in 09, because John Schneider, he's the general manager with the Seattle Seahawks right now, and at that time, he's the assistant general manager of the Green Bay Packers. And what happens a lot of times is when these guys have interests in certain players, they'll go up to, you know, guys that they have on their team that, you know, have been to that school to get more information. Like, for example, Ted Thompson once asked me about Todd Watkins. You know, they asked me about John Beck, you know, and I was going to just, you know, what's your assessment on the guy basically is what they're looking for. And so anyway, John Schneider, all of a sudden after BYU beats Oklahoma, he comes up to me. He's like, Brady, what? He's like, who's an NFL guy there? I mean, this is unbelievable. And I'm like, bro, I don't know. I was like, I can't tell you, honestly. So he's like, all right. So he flies out to BYU. And he's there, and he's watching the film, and he comes back, and this is what he tells me. He says, I don't know how you guys beat Oklahoma. He's like, those guys are getting their asses kicked the whole game. I was like, well, that's just typical BYU guys, man. I was like, they go out there. They don't care if they're undermanned or less talented. They're just going to play hard. And lo and behold, they ended up playing harder and smarter than Oklahoma and won the game. So, and that had been sort of the theme, you know, throughout BYU's last few years. And so that's really why – you know, there hasn't been a lot of NFL guys. There just hasn't been NFL talent. Now, it looks like Kalani's going to try to change that, which I don't think he's going to try to. I think he's going to. The real challenge for him is, you know, as we all have experienced, I mean, I did my years there when I was a junior, and we had pretty much our whole secondary is suspended from the year previous year because of, a sexual scandal. Is, you know, can Kalani make sure these guys that come from different cultures and can they assimilate and survive the BYU culture? You know, that's really what it's going to come down to. But obviously, Kalani's trying to make a different effort and trying to bring guys in whose games transfer to the NFL. And if he's able to keep them at BYU, you'll see that more guys will get drafted, thus proving that it's not a BYU stigma. It has to do with can guys play in the league or not.
Brady, as always, a wealth of knowledge, and really appreciate your opinions on our airwaves. Thanks for hopping on, brother.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me, man. It's always fun.
Indeed. And if I could afford it, I'd definitely buy one of those XPT trainers.
Well, if you can't afford it, just go to Vasa off of Orem. It's off of University Parkway. There's one right there. I'm telling you, you know, you did a good job, Ben. I'm proud of you, man. You went there, you tweeted it out, you said, hey, man, this is me using the XPT. I swear, anybody listening right now, you go use that XPT, you tweet it out, I'm going to send you a prize. I will follow you. You direct message me. I'll get your address. I will send you a worthwhile prize. So go check it out at Vasa off of University Parkway there in Orem, and again, tweet it out or send me a, you know, DM or whatever, and you'll be greatly rewarded.
Indeed. I can't wait to see the rewards from the hand of Brady Papinga. Thank you, Brady. If you've been told you need a filling crown or a root canal, get a second opinion at Dental Pros of Utah and American Fork. They utilize the latest biomimetic techniques to rebuild your teeth in order to prevent ever having to get crowns or root canals later in life. DentalProsOfUtah.com, 801-756-0360. That's 801-756-0360.